Once or twice, I went up too soon. That weren't no good. It was like a racer getting disqualified for jumping the gun. You had to get up there after she had her motor running too fast to shut down, but before she'd actually popped her clutch and dumped a load into those big old continence pants she wore. I got pretty good at it. You would, too, if you knew you'd end up horsing 190 pounds of old lady around if you timed it wrong. It was like trying to deal with a hand grenade loaded with shit instead of high explosives. I'd get up there, and she'd be laying in that hospital bed of hers, face all red, her mouth all screwed up, her elbows digging into the mattress, and her hands balled up in fists, and she'd be going, I tell you something. All she needed was a couple of rolls of flypaper dangling down from the ceiling and a Sears catalog in her lap to look right at home. Oh, Nancy, quit biting the insides of your cheeks. Better to let it out and bear the shame than hold it in and bear the pain, as they say. Besides, it does have its funny side. Shit always does. Ask any kid. I could even let it be a little funny to me now that it's over. And that's something, ain't it? No matter how big a jam I'm in here, my time of dealing with Vera Donovan shit Thursdays is over. She'd hear me coming in. And mad? She'd be just as mad as a bear with one paw caught in a honey tree. What are you doing up here? She'd ask in that hoity-toity way of talking she'd use whenever you caught her getting up to the Dickens. Like she was still going to Vassar, or Holyoaks, or whichever one of the seven sisters it was her folks sent her to. This is cleaning day, Dolores. You go on about your business. I didn't ring for you, and I don't need you. She didn't scare me none. I think you do need me, I'd say. That ain't Chanel number 5 I smell coming out of your butt, is it? Sometimes she'd even try to slap at my hands when I pulled down the sheet and the blanket. She'd be glaring like she meant to turn me to stone if I didn't leave off, and she'd have her lower lip all pooched out like a little kid who don't want to go to school. I never let any of that stop me, though. Not Patricia Claiborne's daughter Dolores. I'd get the sheet down in about 3 seconds, and it never took much more than another 5 to drop her drawers and yank the tapes on those diapers she wore, whether she was slapping my hands or not. Most times she left off doing that after a couple of tries anyway, because she was caught and we both knew it. Her equipment was so old that once she got it going, things just had to run their course. I'd slide the bedpan under her just as neat as you please, and when I left to go back downstairs and really vacuum the parlor, she was apt to be swearing like a dock walloper. Didn't sound a bit like a Vassar girl then, let me tell you, because she knew that time she'd lost the game, you see. And there was nothing Vera hated worse than that. Even in her dotage, she hated to lose something fierce. Things went on that way for quite a while, and I started to think I'd won the whole war instead of just a couple of battles. I should have known better. There came a cleaning day. This was about 1.5 years ago, when I was all set and ready to run my race upstairs and catch her again. I'd even got to like it, sort of. It made up for a lot of times in the past when I'd come off second best with her. And I figured she was planning on a real shit tornado that time, if she could get away with it. All the signs were there, and then some. For one thing, she wasn't just having a bright day, she'd been having a bright week. She even asked me that Monday to put the board across the arms of her chair so she could have a few games of big clock solitaire, just like in the old days. And as far as her bowels went, she was having one hell of a dry spell. She hadn't dropped nothing in the collection plate since the weekend. I figured that particular Thursday she was planning on giving me her goddamn Christmas club as well as her savings account. After I took the bedpan out from under her that cleaning day noon and saw it was dry as a bone, I says to her, "Don't you think you could do something if you tried a little bit harder, Vera?" "Oh, Dolores," she says back, looking up at me with her filmy blue eyes just as innocent as Mary's little lamb. "I've already tried as hard as I can. I tried so hard it hurt me. I guess I am just constipated." I agreed with her right off. "I guess you are. And if it doesn't clear up soon, dear, I'll just have to feed you a whole box of X-Lax to dynamite you loose." "Oh, I think it'll take care of itself in time," she said. and gave me one of her smiles. She didn't have any teeth by then, of course, and she couldn't wear her lower plate unless she was sitting up in her chair, in case she might cough and pull it down her throat and choke on it. When she smiled, her face looked like an old piece of tree trunk with a punky knothole in it.
You know me, Dolores. I believe in letting nature take her course.
I know you all right, I kind of muttered, turning away.
What did you say, dear?
She asks back, so sweet you'd have thought sugar wouldn't melt in her mouth. I said I can't just stand around here waiting for you to go number two, I said. I got housework. It's cleaning day, you know.
Oh, is it?
She says back, just as if she hadn't known what day it was from the first second she woke up that morning.
Then you go on, Dolores. If I feel the need to move my bowels, I'll call you.
I'll bet you will, I was thinking, about 5 minutes after it happens. But I didn't say it. I just went on back downstairs. I got the vacuum cleaner out of the kitchen closet, took it into the parlor, and plugged it in. I didn't start it up right away, though. I spent a few minutes dusting first. I had gotten so I could depend on my instincts by then, and I was waiting for something inside to tell me the time was right. When that thing spoke up and said it was, I hollered to Susie and Shauna that I was going to vacuum the parlor. I yelled loud enough so I imagine half the people down in the village heard me right along with the Queen Mother upstairs. I started the Kirby, then went to the foot of the stairs. I didn't give it long that day. 30 or 40 seconds was all. I figured she had to be hanging on by a thread, so up I went, 2 stairs at a time. And what do you think? Nothing. Not one thing. Except the way she was looking at me, that was. Just as calm and as sweet as you please.
Did you forget something, Dolores?
She coos. Yeah, I says back. I forgot to quit this job 5 years ago. Let's just stop it, Vera.
Stop what, dear? She asks, kind of fluttering her eyelashes like she didn't have the slightest idea what I could be talking about.
Let's quit evens is what I mean. Just tell me straight out. Do you need the bedpan or not?
I don't, she says in her best, most totally honest voice. I told you that.
And just smiled at me. She didn't say a word, but she didn't have to. Her face did all the talking that needed to be done. I got you, Dolores, it was saying. I got you good. But I wasn't done. I knew she was holding on to one gutbuster of a BM, and I knew there'd be hell to pay if she got a good start before I could get the bedpan under her. So I went downstairs and stood by that vacuum, and I waited 5 minutes, and then I ran up again. Only that time she didn't smile at me when I came in. That time she was lying on her side fast asleep, or that was what I thought. I really did. She fooled me good and proper. And you know what they say, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. When I went back down the second time, I really did vacuum the parlor. When the job was done, I put the Kirby away and went back to check on her. She was sitting up in bed, wide awake, covers thrown back, her rubber pants pushed down to her big old flabby knees and her diapers undone. Had she made a mess? Great God. The bed was full of shit. She was covered with shit. There was shit on the rug, on the wheelchair, on the walls. There was even shit on the curtains. It looked like she must have taken up a handful and flung it, the way kids will fling mud at each other when they're swimming in a cow pond. Was I mad? Mad enough to spit? Oh, Vera! Oh, you dirty bitch! I screamed at her. I never killed her, Andy. But if I was gonna, I would have done it that day. When I saw that mess and smelled that room, I wanted to kill her all right. No use lying about that. And she just looked at me with that foozled expression she got when her mind was playing tricks on her. But I could see the devil dancing in her eyes, and I knew well enough who the trick had been played on that time. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Who's that? She asked. Brenda, is that you, dear? Have the cows got out again?
You know there ain't been a cow within 3 mile of here since 1955. And you know friggin' well who it is, I hollered. I came across the room taking great big strides, and that was a mistake, because one of my loafers came down in a clot of her crap, and I damn near went spang on my back. If I had done, I guess I really might have killed her. I wouldn't have been able to stop myself. Right then, I was ready to plow fire and reap brimstone.
I don't, she says, trying to sound like the poor old pitiful lady she really was on a lot of days. I don't. I can't see. And my stomach is so upset. I think I'm going to be whoopsie. Is it you, Dolores?
You know goddamn well it's me, you old bat, I said. But the truth of it is that I was still hollering at the top of my lungs. I could just kill you. I imagine by then Susie Prue and Shauna Wyndham were standing at the foot of the stairs getting an earful. And I imagine you've already talked to them and that they've got me halfway to home. No need to tell me one way or the other, Andy. Awful open your face is. Vera's seen she wasn't fooling me a bit, at least not any more. So she gave up trying to make me believe she'd gone into one of her bad times and got mad herself in self-defense. I think maybe I scared her a little, too. Looking back on it, I scared myself. But, Andy, if you'd seen that room, it looked like dinner time in hell.
I guess you'll do it, too, she yelled back at me. Someday you really will, you ugly, bad-natured old Carradine. You'll kill me just like you killed your husband.
No, ma'am, I said, not exactly. When I get ready to settle your hash, I won't bother making it look like an accident. I'll just shove you out the window, and there'll be one less smelly turd in the world. I grabbed her around the middle and heisted her up like I was Superwoman. I felt it in my back that night, I can tell you. And by the next morning, I could hardly walk. I was in such pain. I went to that chiropractor in Booth Bay, and he did something to it that made it feel a little better. But it ain't never really been right since that day. Right then, I didn't feel a thing, though. I pulled her out of that bed of hers like I was a pissed-off little girl, and she was the Raggedy Ann doll I was going to take it out on. She started to tremble all over, and just knowing that she really was scared helped me catch hold of my temper again. But I'd be a dirty liar if I didn't say I was glad she was scared. Ooh, she screams. Ooh, don't take me over to the window. Don't you throw me out. Don't you dare put me down. You're hurting me, Dolores. Ooh, put me down. Oh, quit your yapping, I says, and drops her into her wheelchair hard enough to rattle her teeth. If she'd had any teeth to rattle, that is. Look at the mess you made. And don't try to tell me you can't see it either, because I know you can. Just look.
I'm sorry, Dolores, she says. She started to blubber,
but I saw that mean little light dancing way down in her eyes. I saw it the way you can sometimes see fish in clear water when you get up on your knees in a boat and look over the side.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make a mess. I was just trying to help.
That's what she always said when she shit the bed and then squooshed around in a little. Although that day was the first time she ever decided to finger paint with it as well.
I was just trying to help, Dolores.
Jesus wept. Sit there and shut up, I said. If you really don't want a fast ride over to that window and an even faster one down to the rock garden, you best mind what I say. And those girls down there at the foot of the stairs, I have no doubt at all, was listening to every word we were saying. But right then, I was too goddamn mad to think about anything like that. She had enough sense to shut up like I told her. But she looked satisfied, and why not? She'd done what she set out to do. This time it was her who'd won the battle and made it clear as window glass that the war wasn't over, not by a long chalk. I went to work cleaning and setting the place to rights again. It took the best part of 2 hours. And by the time I was done, my back was singing Ave Maria. I told you about the sheets, how that was, and I could see by your faces that you understood. It's harder to understand about her messes. I mean, shit don't cross my eyes. I've been wiping it up all my life, and the sight of it never crossed my eyes. It don't smell like a flower garden, of course, and you have to be careful of it because it carries disease just like snot and spit and spilled blood, but it washes off, you know. Anyone who's ever had a baby knows that shit washes off. So that wasn't what made it so bad. I think it was that she was so mean about it. So sly about it. She bided her time. And when she got a chance, she made the worst mess she could. And she did it just as fast as she could, because she knew I wouldn't give her much time. She did that nasty thing on purpose. You see what I'm getting at? As far as her fogged-in brain would let her, she planned it out. And that weighed on my heart and darkened my outlook while I was cleaning up after her, while I was stripping the bed, while I was taking the shitty mattress pad and the shitty sheets and the shitty pillow slips down to the laundry chute, while I was scrubbing the floor and the walls and the window panes, while I was taking down the curtains and putting up fresh ones, while I was making her bed again, while I was gritting my teeth and trying to keep my back locked in place, while I cleaned her up and got a fresh nightgown on her and then hossed her out of the chair and back into bed again, and her not helping a bit, but just lolling there in my arms, dead weight, although I know damn well that was one of the days when she could have helped, if she wanted to. While I was washing the floor, while I was washing off her goddamn wheelchair, and really having to scrub by then because the stuff was dried on, while I was doing all that, my heart was low and my outlook was darkened. She knew it, too. She knew it, and it made her happy. When I went home that night, I took some Anacin 3 for my aching back, and then I went to bed and I curled up in a little ball, even though that hurt my back too, and I cried and cried and cried. Seemed like I couldn't stop. Never, at least since the old business of Joe, have I felt so downhearted and hopeless, or so friggin' old. That was the second way she had of being a bitch, by being mean. What say, Frank? Did she do it again? You're damn tooting. She did it again the next week, and the week after that. It wasn't as bad as that first adventure either time, partly because she wasn't able to save up such a dividend, but mostly because I was prepared for it. I went to bed crying again after the second time it happened, though. And as I lay there in bed, feeling that misery way down low in my back, I made up my mind to quit. I didn't know what had happened to her, or who would take care of her. But right then, I didn't care a fiddly fuck. As far as I was concerned, she could starve to death, laying in her own shitty bed. I was still crying when I fell off to sleep, because the idea of quitting, of her getting the best of me, made me feel worse than ever. But when I woke up, I felt good. I guess it's true how a person's mind doesn't go to sleep, even if a person thinks it does. It just goes on thinking, and sometimes it does an even better job when the person in charge isn't there to frig it up with the usual run of chatter that goes on in a body's head. Chores to do, what to have for lunch, what to watch on TV, things like that. It must be true, because the reason I felt so good was that I woke up knowing how she was fooling me. The only reason I hadn't seen it before was because I was apt to underestimate her. Yeah, even me. And I knew how sly she could be from time to time. And once I understood the trick, I knew what to do about it. It hurt me to know I'd have to trust one of the Thursday girls to vacuum the Oberson. And the idea of Shauna Wyndham doing it gave me what my grandpa used to call the shivering hits. You know how gormy she is, Andy. All the Wyndhams are gormy, of course, but she's got the rest of them beat 7 ways to downtown. It's like she grows bumps right out of her body to knock things over with when she goes by them. It ain't her fault. It's just something in the blood. But I couldn't bear thinking of Shauna charging around in the parlor with all of Vera's carnival glass and Tiffany just begging to be knocked over. Still, I had to do something. Fool me twice, shame on me. And luckily there was Susie to fall back on. She weren't no ballerina, but it was her vacuumed the Orbison for the next year, and she never broke a thing. She's a good girl, Frank. And I can't tell you how glad I was to get that wedding announcement from her, even if the fella was from away. How are they doing? What do you hear? Well, that's fine. Fine, I'm glad for her. I don't suppose she's got a bun in the oven yet, does she? These days it seems like folks wait until they're almost ready for the old folks' home before they... Yes, Andy, I will. I just wish you'd remember it's my life I'm talking about here. My goddamn life. So why don't you just flop back in that big old chair of yours and put your feet up and relax? If you keep pushing that way, you're going to give yourself a rupture. Anyway, Frank, you give her my best and tell her she just about saved Dolores Claiborne's life in the summer of 91. You can give her the inside story about the Thursday shitstorms and how I stopped them. I never told them exactly what was going on. All they knew for sure was that I was butting heads with Her Royal Majesty. I see now I was ashamed to tell them what was going on. I guess I don't like getting beat any more than Vera ever did. It was the sound of the vacuum, you see. That was what I realized when I woke up that morning. I told you there was nothing wrong with her ears. It was the sound of the vacuum that told her if I was really doing the parlor or standing at the foot of the stairs on my mark. When a vacuum cleaner is sitting in one spot, it only makes one sound, you see. Just zoo, like that. But when you vacuum in a rug, it makes two sounds, and they go up and down in waves. Whoop, that's when you push it out, and zoop, when you pull it back to you for another stroke. Whoop, zoop, whoop, zoop, whoop, zoop. Quit scratching your head, you two, and look at the smile Nancy's wearing. All a body'd have to do to know which of you has spent some time running a vacuum cleaner is to look at your faces. If you really feel like it's that important, Andy, try it for yourself. You'll hear it right off. Though I imagine Maria'd just about drop dead if she came in and saw you vacuum in the living room rug. What I realized that morning was that she'd stopped just listening for when the vacuum cleaner started running because she'd realized that wasn't good enough anymore. She was listening to see if the sound went up and down like it does when a vacuum's actually working. She wouldn't pull her dirty little trick until she'd heard that whoop-zoop wave. I was crazy to try out my new idea, but I couldn't right away because she went into one of her bad times right about then, and for quite a while she just did her business in the bedpan or peed a little in her diapers if she had to. And I started to get scared that this would be the time she wouldn't come back out of it. I know that sounds funny, since she was so much easier to mind when she was confused in her thinking. But when a person gets a good idea like that, they kind of want to take it for a test drive. And you know, I felt something for that bitch besides wanting to throttle her. After knowing her for over 40 years, it'd be goddamn strange if I didn't. She knitted me an afghan once, you know. This was long before she got really bad, but it's still on my bed. And it's some warm on those February nights when the wind plays up nasty. Then about a month or a month and a half after I woke up with my idea, she started to come round again. She'd watch Jeopardy on the little bedroom TV and rag the contestants if they didn't know who was president during the Spanish-American War or who played Melanie in Gone with the Wind. She started all her old globber about how her kids might come and visit her before Labor Day, and of course she pestered to be put in her chair so she could watch me hang the sheets and make sure I use 6 pins and not just 4. Then there come a Thursday when I pulled the bedpan out from under her at noon, dry as a bone and empty as a salesman's promises. I can't tell you how pleased I was to see that empty bedpan. Here we go, you sly old fox, I thought. Now ain't we gonna see? I went downstairs and called Susie Prue into the parlor. I want you to vacuum in here today, Susie, I told her. Okay, Mrs. Claiborne, she said. That's what both of them called me, Andy. What most people on the island called me, as far as that goes. I never made an issue of it at church or anywhere else, but that's how it is. It's like they think I was married to a fellow named Claiborne at some point in my checkered past. Or maybe I just want to believe most of them don't remember Joe, although I guess there's plenty who do. It don't matter too much one way or the other in the end. I guess I am entitled to believe what I want to believe. I was the one married to the bastard, after all.
I don't mind, she goes on, but why are you whispering?
Never mind, I said. Just keep your own voice down, and don't you break anything in here, Susan Emma Prue, don't you dare. Well, she blushed just as red as the side of the volunteer fire truck. It was actually sort of comical.
How did you know my middle name was Emma?
None of your beeswax, I says. I've spent donkey's years on Little Tall, and there's no end to the things I know, and the people I know 'em about. You just be careful of your elbows around the furniture and Mrs. God's carnival glass vases, especially when you're backing up, and you won't have a thing to worry about.
I'll be extra careful, she said.
I turned the Kirby on for her, and then I stepped into the hall, cupped my hands around my mouth, and hollered, Susie, Shauna, I'm gonna vacuum the parlor now. Susie was standing right there, of course, and I tell you, that girl's entire face was a question mark. I just kind of flapped my hand at her, telling her to go on about her business and never mind me, which she did. I tiptoed over to the foot of the stairs and stood in my old place. I know it's silly, but I ain't been so excited since my dad took me hunting for the first time when I was 12. It was the same kind of feeling, too, with your heart beating hard and kind of flat in your chest and neck. The woman had dozens of valuable antiques as well as all that expensive glass in the parlor, but I never spared a thought to Susie Prue in there, whirling and twirling amongst them like a dervish, do you believe it? I made myself stay where I was as long as I could, about a minute and a half, I think. Then I dashed. And when I popped into her room, there she was, face red, eyes all squinched down into slits, fists balled up, going, Her eyes flew open in a hurry when she heard the bedroom door bang open, though. Oh, I wish I'd had a camera. It was priceless.
Dolores, you get right back out of here, she kind of squeaks. I'm trying to have a nap, and I can't do it if you're going to come busting in here like a bull with a hat on every 20 minutes.
Well, I said, I'll go, but first I think I'll put this old fanny pan under you. From the smell, I'd say a little scare was about all you needed to take care of your constipation problem. She slapped at my hands and cussed me. She could cuss something fierce when she wanted to. And she wanted to every time somebody crossed her. But I didn't pay much attention. I got the bedpan under as slick as a whistle, and like they say, everything came out all right. When it was done, I looked at her, and she looked at me, and neither one of us had to say a thing. We knew each other of old, you see. There, you nasty old quim, I was saying with my face. I've caught up with you again, and how do you like it? Not much, Dolores, she was saying with hers, but that's all right. Just because you got caught up doesn't mean you'll stay caught up. I did, though. That time I did. There were a few more little messes, but never again anything like the time I told you about, when there was even shit on the curtains. That was really her last hurrah. After that, the times when her mind was clear got fewer and fewer, and when they came, they were short. It saved my aching back, but it made me sad, too. She was a pain, but it was one I'd gotten used to. I knew it for what it was when it came, and didn't go off half-cocked thinking it was cancer or a heart attack, if you see what I mean. Could I have another glass of water, Frank? Thank you. Talking's thirsty work. And if you decide to let that bottle of Gentleman Jim Beam out of your desk for a little fresh air, Andy, I'll never tell. No, Well, that's about what I expected from the likes of you. Now, where was I? Oh, I know, about how she was. Well, the third way she had of being a bitch was the worst. She was a bitch because she was a sad old lady who had nothing to do but die in an upstairs bedroom on an island far from the places and the people she'd known most of her life. That was bad enough, but she was losing her mind while she did it. And there was part of her that knew the rest of her was like an undercut riverbank getting ready to slide down into the stream. She was lonely, you see, and that I didn't understand. I never understood why she threw over her whole life to come out to the island in the first place, at least not until yesterday. But she was scared, too, and I could understand that just fine. And even so, she had a horrible, scary kind of strength, like a dying queen that won't let go of her crown even at the end. It's like God himself has got to pry it loose a finger at a time. She had her good days and her bad ones, I told you that. What I call her fits always happened in between, when she was changing from a few days of being bright to a week or two of being fogged in, or from a week or two of being fogged in to a time of being bright again. When she was changing, it was like she was nowhere, and part of her knew that, too. That was the time when she'd have her hallucinations. If they were all hallucinations, I'm not so sure about that as I used to be. Maybe I'll tell you that part, and maybe I won't. I'll just have to see how I feel when the time comes. I guess they didn't all come on Sunday afternoons or in the middle of the night. I guess it's just that I remember those ones the best because the house was so quiet, and it would scare me so when she started screaming. It was like having somebody throw a bucket of ice-cold water over you on a hot summer's day. There never was a time I didn't think my heart would stop when her screams began. And there never was a time I didn't think I'd come into her room and find her dying. The things she was scared of never made sense, though. I mean, I knew she was scared, and I had a pretty good idea what she was scared of, but never why. "The wires!" she'd be screaming sometimes when I went in. She'd be all scrunched up in bed, her hands clutched together between her boobs, her punky old mouth drawn up and trembling. She'd be as pale as a ghost, and the tears would be running down the wrinkles under her eyes. "The wires, Dolores, stop the wires!" And she'd always point at the same place, the baseboard in the far corner. Wasn't nothing there, of course, except there was to her. She seen all these wires coming out of the wall and scratching across the floor toward her bed. At least that's what I think she seen. What I'd do was run downstairs and get one of the butcher knives off the kitchen rack and then come back up with it. I'd kneel down in the corner, or closer to the bed if she acted like they'd already progressed a fairish way, and pretend to chop them off. I'd do that, bringing the blade down light and easy on the floor so I wouldn't scar that good maple, until she stopped crying. Then I'd go over to her and wipe the tears off her face with my apron or one of the Kleenex she always kept stuffed under a pillow, and I'd kiss her a time or two and say, "There, dear, they're gone. I chopped off every one of those pesky wires. See for yourself." She'd look, although at these times I'm telling you about she couldn't really see nothing, and she'd cry some more like as not, and then she'd hug me and say, "Thank you, Dolores. I thought this time they were going to get me for sure." Or sometimes she'd call me Brenda when she thanked me. She was the housekeeper the Donovans had in their Baltimore place. Other times she'd call me Clarice, who was her sister and died in 1958. Sometimes I'd get up there to her room and she'd be half off the bed, screaming that there was a snake inside her pillow. Other times she'd be setting up with her blankets over her head, hollering that the windows were magnifying the sun and it was going to burn her up. Sometimes she'd swear she could already feel her hair frizzing. Didn't matter if it was raining or foggier and a drunk's head outside, she was bound and determined the sun was going to fry her alive, so I'd pull down all the shades and then hold her until she stopped crying. Sometimes I held her longer, because even after she'd gotten quiet, I could feel her trembling like a puppy that's been mistreated by mean kids. She'd ask me over and over again to look at her skin and tell her if it had blistered anywhere.
I'd tell her over and over again that it hadn't. And after a little of that, she'd sometimes go to sleep. Other times she wouldn't. She'd just fall into a stupor, muttering to people who weren't there. Sometimes she'd talk French. And I don't mean that parlez-vous island French either. She and her husband loved Paris and went there every chance they got, sometimes with the kids and sometimes by themselves. Sometimes she talked about it when she was feeling perky. The cafes, the nightclubs, the galleries, and the boats on the Seine. And I loved to listen. She had a way with words, Vera did. And when she really talked a thing up, you could almost see it. But the worst thing, what she was scared of most of all, were nothing but dust bunnies. You know what I mean? Those little balls of dust that collect under beds and behind doors and in corners. Look sort of like milkweed pods, they do. I knew it was them even when she couldn't say it, and most times I could get her calm down again. But why she was so scared of a bunch of ghost turds, what she really thought they were, that I don't know. Although I once got an idea. Don't laugh, but it come to me in a dream. Luckily, the business of the dust bunnies didn't come up so often as the sun burning her skin or the wires in the corner. But when that was it, I knew I was in for a bad time. I knew it was dust bunnies, even if it was the middle of the night and I was in my room fast asleep with the door closed when she started screaming. When she got a bee in her bonnet about the other things. What, honey? Oh, wasn't I? No, you don't need to move your cute little recorder any closer. If you want me to talk up, I will. Most generally, I'm the ballinest bitch you ever run across. Joe used to say he wished for cotton to stick in his ears every time I was in the house. But the way she was about the dust bunnies gave me the creeps. And if my voice dropped, I guess that just proves they still do. Even with her dead, they still do. Sometimes I used to scold her about it. Why do you want to get up to such a mess of foolishness, Vera? I'd say. But it wasn't foolishness. Not to Vera, at least. I thought more than once that I knew how she'd finally punch out. She'd scare herself to death over those friggin' dust bunnies. And that ain't so far from the truth, either, now that I think about it. What I started to say was that when she got a bee in her bonnet about the other things, the snake in the pillow slip, the sun, the wires, she'd scream. When it was the dust bunnies, she'd shriek. Wasn't even words in it most times, just shrieking so long and loud it put ice cubes in your heart. I'd run in there and she'd be yanking at her hair or harrowing her face with her fingernails and looking like a witch. Her eyes would be so big they almost looked like soft-boiled eggs, and they were always staring into one corner or the other. Sometimes she was able to say, "Dust bunnies, Dolores! Oh, my God, dust bunnies!" Other times she could only cry and gag. She'd clap her hands over her eyes for a second or two, but then she'd take them back down. It was like she couldn't bear to look, but couldn't bear not to look either. And she'd start going at her face with her fingernails again. I kept them clipped, just as short as I could, but she still drew blood lots of times. And I wondered every time it happened how her heart could stand the plain terror of it, as old and fat as she was. One time she fell right out of bed and just lay there with one leg twisted under her. Scared the bejesus out of me, it did. I ran in and there she was on the floor, beating her fists on the boards like a kid doing a tantrum and screaming fit to raise the roof. That was the only time in all the years I did for her that I called Dr. Freneau in the middle of the night. He came over from Jonesport in Collie Violette's speedboat. I called him because I thought her leg was broken. Had to be, the way it was bent under her, and she'd almost surely die of the shock. But it wasn't. I don't know how it wasn't, but Freneau said it was just sprained. And the next day she slipped into one of her bright periods again and didn't remember a thing of it. I asked her about the dust bunnies a couple of times when she had the world more or less in focus, and she looked at me like I was crazy. Didn't have the slightest idea what I was talking about. After it happened a few times, I knew what to do. As soon as I heard her shrieking that way, I was up from bed and out my door.
My bedroom's only 2 doors down from hers, you know, with the linen closet in between. I kept a broom propped in the hall with the dustpan poked onto the end of the handle ever since she had her first hissy over the dust bunnies. I go pelting into her room, waving the broom like I was trying to flag down a goddamn mail train, screaming myself. It was the only way I could make myself heard. "I'll get 'em, Vera," I'd shout. "I'll get 'em. Just hold the friggin' phone." And I'd sweep at whatever corner she was staring into, and then I'd do the other one for good measure. Sometimes she'd calm down after that, but more often she'd start hollering that there were more under the bed. So I'd get down on my hands and knees and make like I was sweeping under there, too. Once the stupid, scared, pitiful old dub almost fell right out of bed on top of me, trying to lean over and look for herself. She probably would have squashed me like a fly. What a comedy that would have been. Once I'd swept every place that had her scared, I'd show her my empty dustpan and say, "There, dear, see? I got every one of those prickish things." She'd look into the dustpan first. Then she'd look up at me, trembling all over, her eyes so drowned in her own tears that they swam like rocks when you look down and see them in a stream. And she'd whisper, "Oh, Dolores, they're so gray, so nasty. Take them away, please, take them away." I'd put the broom and the empty dustpan back outside my door, handy for action next time, and then I'd go back in to soothe her as best I could. To soothe myself as well. And if you think I didn't need a little soothing, you try waking up all alone in a big old museum like that in the middle of the night, with the wind screaming outside and an old crazy woman screaming inside. My heart'd be going like a locomotive, and I couldn't hardly get my breath. But I couldn't let her see how I was, or she'd have started to doubt me. And wherever would we have gone from there? What I'd do most times after those set-tos was brush her hair. It was the thing that seemed to calm her down the quickest. She'd moan and cry at first, and sometimes she'd reach out her arms and hug me, pushing her face against my belly. I remember how hot her cheeks and forehead always were after she threw one of her dust bunny wingdings, and how sometimes she'd wet my nighty right through with her tears. Poor old woman. I don't guess any of us here know what it is to be that old and to have devils after you you can't explain, even to yourself. Sometimes not even half an hour with the hairbrush would do the trick. She'd keep looking past me into the corner, and every so often she'd catch her breath and whimper. Or she'd flap her hand at the dark under the bed and then kind of snatch it back, like she expected something under there to try and bite it. Once or twice, even I thought I saw something moving under there, and I had to clamp my mouth shut to keep from screaming myself. All I saw was just the moving shadow of her own hand, of course, I know that, but it shows what a state she got me in, don't it? Yeah, even me, and I'm usually just as hard-headed as I am loud-mouthed. On those times when nothing else to do, I'd get into bed with her. Her arms would creep around me and hold on to my sides, and she'd lay the side of her head down on what's left of my bosom, and I'd put my arms around her and just hold her until she drifted off. Then I'd creep out of bed, real slow and easy, so as not to wake her up, and go back to my own room. There was a few times I didn't even do that. Those times, they always came when she woke me up in the middle of the night with her yowling. I fell asleep with her. It was on one of those nights that I dreamed about the dust bunnies. Only in the dream, I wasn't me. I was her, stuck in that hospital bed, so fat I couldn't even hardly turn over without help, and my coos burning way down deep from the urinary infection that wouldn't never really go away on account of how she was always damp down there and had no real resistance to anything. The welcome mat was out for any bug or germ that came along, you might say, and it was always turned around the right way. I looked over in the corner, and what I saw was this thing that looked like a head made out of dust. Its eyes were all rolled up, and its mouth was open and full of long, snaggly dust teeth. It started coming toward the bed, but slow, and when it rolled around to the face side again, the eyes were looking right at me. and I saw it was Michael Donovan, Vera's husband. The second time the face come around, though, it was my husband. It was Joe St. George, with a mean grin on his face and a lot of long dust teeth, all snapping. The third time it rolled around, it wasn't nobody I knew, but it was alive. It was hungry, and it meant to roll all the way over to where I was so it could eat me.